less stress, more time, more money. Welcome to the Cashflow Contractor, Short.
Martin, you came to my office for the first time yesterday.
Yeah, really cool.
Yeah.
You're up by the catwalk in an old building, remodeled old building, and catwalks are awesome.
It was. I'd never been in there until you opened the door to it. So,
yeah. Yeah, weird. Don't know what they would possibly be used for.
Yeah. What could a partner possibly be used for?
Well, that's a good question. Why don't we look into that?
Let's go into it. When do you feel like people generally try to partner?
Well, I don't know. There's some people who would never consider it, and there's some people who would never consider being business without it. But if we're going to talk about partners in kind of a generic way, I like to make the point that a partner doesn't just mean, to me, when I'm talking about it, doesn't just mean the IRS designation of a partner, and you treat it as a partnership. Yeah. When I talk about partners, I'm talking about anybody that you grant significant authority or ownership, whatever the form, stock. Anyway, they become a partner of you, as in kind of the generic term, in your business. And I think there are lots of reasons people would do it. Why would you want a partner, Khalil?
I feel like if I want to partner with someone, it's because I don't have either the time, I don't have something that's necessary to be able to do it. Right. And a lot of that can become head trash. Like, I don't feel like I have the knowledge. I don't have the experience. I don't have the ability to go do it. But then also maybe I don't have the money to go do it. Maybe there's a significant capital investment, so I need to partner with someone who does have that investment. And then I'm able to go and put that sweat equity in where I'm giving my time, or vice versa. I really don't have the time to do this, but I believe in it enough that I can put some money into it as an investment and some of my time, but not as much as is necessary to actually complete it. But that's when I think, you know, a partnership should be going. And oftentimes what I see with contractors that are starting out, typically it's always when they're just starting out. It's not like they're bringing on a partner after they've already had some success or had some traction. It's usually, we're going to go do this thing. We're going to go start a roofing company or a pool company or whatever it is. And oftentimes that partner is kind of just brought on because there's so much uncertainty of starting a business, of doing things, that there's some comfort in doing it with someone rather than just going out alone. That's what I see. Right. Do you agree?
I agree 100%. Matter of fact, I was just kind of looking through a list of the things that I hear often, and they parallel what you said. Part of it is to share the work and responsibility and have a sounding board. Somebody bring complementary skills. Like if you and I were to work together, I might have some manufacturing hands-on skills and you got all the technology skills, right?
Right.
To bring money, which is what you said, to bring ideas and strategies, to smooth emotional peaks and valleys, you know, if it's all on you. Some people really enjoy having all the responsibility all the time. Yeah. Other people like it at certain times. And if you can get people whose peaks and valleys match up, you have an average of a level-headed business all the time, right?
Right.
And people might bring connections, you know? Mm-hmm. So there are lots of reasons I hear for people, but the problem with partners, people that you've granted significant rights or ownership to for whatever the reason, is they add a huge amount of complexity to owning a business. Even if you get along well and you're simpatico and everything's great, it still adds a lot of complexity because any decision you make affects somebody else who has rights.
Yeah.
And conversely, any decision they make, you know, there are laws and things like that, but if somebody is a partner of a business and they go out, they oftentimes can commit that partnership, or they can spend the money, or they can take the money, or they can fire somebody because they have apparent authority the world doesn't know what your partnership agreement or contract actually says. So there is fraught with risk. And for that reason, I like to ask people to really examine why they're thinking about a partner. You know, it might be because they're scared and think they can't do it themselves. It might be because I don't know how to do that, right?
Yeah.
Might be because I have a hard time making decisions, which might be a good place to bring a partner. It might be that, hey, we've always been friends. We've been buddies. We love working together. So we're just going to go do this. We can hang out all the time, right? One thing that I see a lot is if you can bring somebody on with necessary skills and pay them in equity, you think you're starting on the cheap because you don't have cash. And I guess it's a good time to explore that. If you're, what that tells me is that you don't think your company's worth anything.
Yeah.
Because if you're giving somebody, a number I hear a lot is, oh, I'll give you 10% if you go complete this deal or something. Maybe there's a little contract, maybe a letter that says that. Then it's unclear what that person was going to do. They don't do anything. You build a company, you're doing $10 million a year, and you got somebody who owns 10% of it, right? Who never did anything. And they might never have done anything, but that might not be the way a court sees it if you get sued. So that's one thing that I see a lot is people think they're going to use equity to get in because they don't have any money. So you really have to examine whether it's worth it, you know, to do it.
And there are a lot of successful partnerships out there, but there's also, I would think you can probably tell differently or agree with me, but there's way more unsuccessful partnerships than there are partnerships out there, in my opinion. Just
that you're echoing Dave Ramsey, who says, do not enter a partnership. Every ship sails but the partnership.
Yeah.
Now that's the only ship that doesn't patently, sail a partnership. That's not strictly true. I mean, Hewlett Packard and Wozniak and Jobs, and I know local people here who've been partners for 40 years. One of them died thinking about interurban guys. You know them, Khalil. Mm-hmm. And so they can work, but they usually don't. And
it takes a very, very sophisticated relationship and the ability to navigate it. It requires humility. It requires a deep understanding of the long term and a deep care for the business between all parties. I mean, there's just so many factors that have to be right that it's typically they're overlooked. And I think that they go wrong fairly often. I think it's good to outline how they can go wrong. I can't remember who we talked with. We have an episode at some point that we spoke with someone that said, you have to start by thinking about the worst case scenario possible.
Oh yeah.
You and a partner are going into business. Well, what does it look like at the end? Let's say the business is super successful. Let's say that both of you get a divorce as you are going through this partnership, that you have no agreement in place, that there's sexual harassment involved, there's cheating and stealing and lying going on inside the business, but there's a lot of money at stake. We're talking millions and millions of dollars. How should it be handled? That's the lens through which you should be writing your, operating agreement, talking about ownership, talking about final decisions, all that kind of stuff. What does it look like if I hate this other person?
Right.
That's literally what you have to start out with, because otherwise you don't cover it.
Kind of to back you up on that, in my experience, I know more companies, including two of my own, that essentially failed or were sold or didn't work out the way we anticipated because of disagreements among partners, different kind of people. Now that's personal. And I have a poster hanging in my in my conference room from a company that had one of the greatest vision statements and company culture statements I've ever seen, but it wasn't true for the three owners and the company. They got to fighting, as we say in Oklahoma, and they didn't even sell it. It went away.
It dissolved.
They had an auction. Yeah. That's partly culture, but that's the values of the partners. And I think kind of reviewing the reasons that partners, every decision we make affects them and every decision they make affects us, right? Mm-hmm. Every facet of their life affects you. You know, if there are changes in mood, their personal finances, maybe their family lives, their health, you know, their children, where they want to live. Those types of decisions affect you. They're expensive. Sharing equity and sharing profits for the life of your company is way more expensive than paying somebody to do a contract service for you, like set up your IT, you know, set up your, the partner that we have today may not be the partner we have tomorrow. And by that, I mean, literally and figuratively, the person's desires and life might change, but they also might pass and you wind up with a spouse as a partner, right? So all of a sudden the partner you thought you had isn't the partner that you have, right? Yeah. It's things like that. As I said earlier, they can commit to something and they're committing you oftentimes. And you may say at home at night, they can't do that. Or as I heard, one attorney told me, I asked what was the stupidest question this attorney had ever heard. And he said, can he do that? Was the question, when he just did, right? Second stupid question is, well, is it legal? Well, that's what we're going to go find out in court, right? But anyway, they just do things and you find out that that's how it happened. And so the last thing really is you're stuck if you can't just change your mind and get out. Mm-hmm. We talk about firing people and how hard that is to do, but it's something you can do. Yeah. With partner, you can't necessarily just, you may have provisions in an agreement, which we haven't talked about, but you usually just can't fire them and get rid of them.
Right.
So you're really taking on an obligation and you need to decide, do I want to do this because I'm scared and can I suck it up, or do I really need this person? And matter of fact, I think we had Michael Girdley on maybe a couple of weeks ago. He's a great guy, and he put out a list of questions that he asks himself. So presumably here, he's decided to take on a partner, and now he asks 11 questions before partnering with anybody, before absolutely doing that. And I thought they were pretty good. And so this is an attempt to explore how compatible you are before you commit to anything. And then there's a step beyond this. But he says, does each partner bring complementary skills to the table? You know, the idea is maybe you got an outside sales guy, got an inside high C accountant guy. You know, they're different skills, but the company needs both. So you're getting complementary, supplementary skills.
Yeah, it doesn't really work if you both have the same skill set. If you both are just salespeople, well, how's operations going to look? How's accounting going to look?
Right.
You know, Michael Girdley says 1 + 1 = 3 is the goal of a partnership.
Right.
Absolutely. Just leveraging each other to get more than you could on your own.
Right. So that's a great place to start when you're considering somebody. And said, do we have aligned desires and outcomes and lifestyles? And I've seen that personally. If somebody's all about giving to others, building a company, it's not about the money. It's about, I mean, ultimately there has to be the money, but they're all about building something. The other's in it for to get rich quick. You're going to have conflict, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think he talks about missionaries versus mercenaries. And he's always wanted people that are in it for the mission, that they put that ahead of their personal interests, that they are not focused on just getting rich quick, but they believe in the long-term vision and mission of the company. And when he said that he doesn't partner with people that are mercenaries that are just trying to get rich quick, execute and get out, because it typically isn't for the right reasons and it doesn't align with how he sees it. So I think that's a good way to think about it.
I have a company right now that I worked with for a while, and it's not business threatening, but they have a minority partner and a majority partner. Majority partner is all about the business. It's all about growing and helping customers and what we would think of as conventional business. Other people, his partners, are more finance guys, right? They look at numbers and they go this and then this, and they get along fine and things are working, but they don't speak the same language. Finance guys, you make a big sale and they're going, yeah, yeah, you know, pat you on the head. Good job. And then the business guys are going, damn it, you guys wouldn't have any numbers to multiply if it weren't for me. You know, so it's just not as much fun as it could be, even though that is not a bad combination. Want to Gurley again, do you, I enjoy spending time with this person, right?
Right. Yeah.
So, because you're going to,
and a lot
maybe
of time
some late, long hours, right? And his next one, I really want to hit on a bunch. He said, are we comfortable planning for potential breakups? At the end of a paper I wrote, I talk about that, and he brings it up here, is before you partner with anybody, you must talk about what could happen if there's dissolution, divorce, I can't remember all the death, one of you dies. If you need to put in money, who's going to put in the money? Literally, who does what? You know, what are their responsibilities? It's really easy over a beer and a napkin to plan out this great partnership and rah-rah. But when it gets down to it, especially when, for example, hey, we need another $500,000.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not putting it in. You're the money guy. Wait a minute. So planning that and having that conversation is absolutely critical.
Yeah. I think conflict resolution is something that you have to be comfortable with in this, because there's going to be daily conflict resolution. How do we handle these conflicts? Who gets the final word? How do we vote on things? Because sometimes there's more than one partner. And that's why I think it's, in my opinion, helpful to have someone who is the, you know, majority shareholder who has that final decision. It just makes it easier, in my opinion. But obviously they can go the wrong way, but still it's very clear who's running things. If it's 50-50, I think you just run into a world of issue. That's where the litigation really gets hard, right? Whenever it's 50-50.
Well, they have to have some sort of a method. 50-50, that's one place you can get litigation, but also that means status quo prevails. Like, you want to change? If anybody says no, you're not going to.
Exactly.
So there are ways around it. It doesn't mean that you're going to fall apart, but you might get pretty frustrated and angry over somebody doesn't want to do what you clearly think is the right thing to do.
Well, I think just understanding how someone works, like if they're the person that's getting heated into arguments all the time, definitely not someone you want to partner with, because that's what really every week is going to look like for you. You're going to get into heated arguments. If you don't know how to stick up for yourself, you probably should enter a partnership, because you just get run over, right? Like you've got to, like we said at the beginning, there are so many factors that have to really line out perfectly for this to work. And if not, you're not only ruining a business, you're potentially ruining your life. You know, I think a lot of people try to partner with really good friends. They have a similar values and background, but money has never been a part of your relationship, really. And daily habits and tasks and responsibilities have never been something you've had to manage in that friendship. And when you start having to do that, it's really tough. And you may lose that lifelong friend who you trusted with your livelihood, in a sense. So you've got to be ready for that and think of it in the worst. And that's why so many partnerships fail. They don't. One thing I wanted to say, there's a guy named Dale Partridge, I believe. He's an entrepreneur. And his main thing with partnerships is that he would never start a partnership for a new business if it was going to be his greatest source of income. Like if it was going to be his number one primary source of income, nope, he needs control over that. He would only do it in new ventures that were a secondary source. And he would always go into it thinking, this is going to fail. He would see it as a complete gamble.
Right.
I'm giving up this $100,000 to start this company. because it's like I'm going to the casino. And then he was okay if it ended. If things went sour, he was okay with, he would always go into it being okay with losing the relationship, with losing the money. And so he would never partner with friends. He would partner with people that, you know, he trusted in a certain light, but also was okay with not having that relationship anymore. And that made it way easier to be able to go into it and, you know, not be too concerned because he would have that mindset. And that's just not what most people have.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I talked to all the people I've worked with over the years who invested money, and I described their investment. It had to be money that you could have in your fist and stick out your window driving 75 miles an hour down the interstate. And if you lost it, you probably wouldn't turn around and go back and start looking for it. I mean, really at that level, you know.
Yeah.
And that served me well. And I've had some things that didn't work out and I kept the friends. So, but if you're going into it where it is your primary, right? I think your man had a good idea not to do it that way. But if you are, Michael Girdley talks about a one-page memorandum of understanding where he hits these topics. And he does that and does that sitting down. I am in favor, if you're really doing it, that you get in front of an experienced deal attorney who brings up really difficult conversations. Like, who, if you are 50-50, who breaks the ties? You have to talk about that stuff up front. And if somebody dies and the spouse takes over, you got an automatic buyout, or what's going on? Like we talked about, hard talks about money, who puts money in exchange for what? What are the salaries going to be, right? Who's responsible for what duties? Who's the boss? What happens if a partner leaves? You know, they just decide, I've had it. You buy them out, or, you know, what happens? And is having those, what if the company goes out of business, right? What happens if a partner gets a divorce? What happens if, or how will the profits be distributed? Some, quite often a company will make money. And if you have not comparable owners, they won't, you will wind up with a tax liability by virtue of owning an LLC, let's say. And the other partner may be in control and say, well, I'm not distributing any cash to go with this. There are some places where there are legal requirements, but I'm not going to distribute cash because we need it in the company. So you pay your own tax bill. Well, if you're disproportionate, one partner may be good with that and you may be threatened by that, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, what's the exit plan and how would one partner buy out another? There are all kinds of different ways that people do that. But you have to have those conversations up front because it's hard enough when nothing's happened. It's almost impossible when money and maybe hard feelings have shown up. But if you've got a great contract, when you put together whatever form of partnership you're doing, you at least dealt with these things and improved the prospects. And one of the most important things is in having those discussions, you might find out that you're not compatible and you avoid going into the partnership in the first place, which is one of the best
decisions you can make. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think my favorite question that he asks on here is, if you were going to hire this partner as an employee, would they be a hell yes? Would they be like, oh, absolutely, I would love to have them on my team as an employee. If you can't say that, then it's maybe not a good thing to partner with them. And you should go through a hiring process, really. Like, have interviews. I mean, obviously you may know this person as a friend, but have difficult conversations and interviews and grill them and check references. If you maybe know them as a friend and you haven't actually known them as a working partner, interview their previous bosses, call their people that used to work with them to see what it was like working with them. I think that's a huge one that can save, just by doing that and framing it in that mind can really help people.
Yeah. I think generally an overarching thing from today is partnerships carry a great deal of risk. They can be beneficial, but they carry a great deal of risk. a great deal of obligation. And you need to anticipate that. You need to have conversations before you enter into a partnership agreement of any type. And the default position is no.
Yeah.
Right? The default position, you go in saying, I do not need a partner. I must convince myself appropriately that I do, because it will just save you money, time, conflict, drama as you go forward. Maybe everything will be perfect, but that's the rare case.
Yeah. Well, I have no plans to be in a partnership, but maybe someone else out there does. I hope this is helpful for them. And yeah, thanks for sharing your wisdom on this, Martin. And I think that anybody who's going into a partnership should listen to this before they do.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Hey, we can put Girdley's answers and an article that I wrote on partners in the show notes.
So yeah, let's do that.
Read it online.
We'll put those in the show notes for listeners. And yeah, thanks for listening to the Cashflow Contractor. Hope you're finding less stress, more time, and more money in your business and in your life. Subscribe to us, get our newsletter down in the show notes, as well as follow us on YouTube, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, all the different channels. We'd love to have you a part of our audience. Thanks. See you, Martin.
See you.
Thanks for listening to The Cashflow Contractor. Check out our website in the show notes or visit thecashflowcontractor.com.